This podcast is brought to you by WRFL, Radio Free Lexington. Find us online at WRFL.fm. Catch us on your FM radio while you're in Central Kentucky at 88.1 FM, all the way to the left. Thank you for listening, and please be sure to subscribe.
Everyone, thank you for tuning in and checking out. You're listening to WRFL Lexington. More importantly, you're listening to Tech Talks. We are here every Thursday from 6 to 8 p.m. And as a result, that means it's time to tune in and tech out with us. So, got a late start today. Been a lot going on. And we're going to get quite a few things to talk about. Grant, do you want to start out with the innocent story or the scary story?
Let's start out with the innocent one.
So, if you have seen, Nintendo had recently released a classic NES remake that has all the NES, or a lot of the NES games already built on it. It fits in the palm of your hand. We've covered it a couple different times. The retro NES has been discontinued by Nintendo. Yeah, which, as another person on my Facebook feed today had pointed out, that is only going to encourage more people to use emulators.
I think probably so.
Because if you can't, you know, if Nintendo was smart, they're trying several different routes. People still like handheld console type stuff. So, like, could you imagine what they would, how things would go if they released a handheld that would be able to play Game Boy Color and Game Boy Advance and DS games all in one console or one handheld device?
I mean, at this point, I feel like we're almost kind of setting the bar low. Honestly, you could probably put in a Super Nintendo cartridge, and at that point, the biggest thing is just the size of the cartridge itself over the hardware inside, you know? Yeah. Like, dream big here. If you're going to dream, dream big. But, yeah, no, there's no reason why they couldn't do that. All that hardware could live together very nicely at this point. If we're talking about just DS and not 3DS?
I mean, honestly, they probably could at this point make a handheld with the way the things have been going. Make a slightly more expensive, it'd probably be closer to $500 for a handheld. Something like the Nintendo Switch, but have it be able to play all of Nintendo's games going back to, like, the Game Boy Color and the GameCube. Like, if they imagine if they made the Switch, honestly, like the next version of the Switch, be their ultimate, you know, the ultimate, like, Nintendo Con or something like that. Call it something stupid like that. And it be a console where you can play almost any Nintendo game on one system. Because I've seen several third-party companies come out with these multi-level systems. I saw one that would play Game Boy Color games, Game Boy Advance games, Sega Genesis games, Atari games, all in one, you know, bastardized hybrid console. And so, I mean, it's definitely something people will pay for. You know, people still have these old games. They're collectible now. They're honestly antique. What was it? Everything. VHSs are now classified as antique, which is, I think, when a piece of technology becomes like 20 years old, it becomes a technology antique or antique.
I don't know the nuance of where that term came from, honestly.
Let's say 20 years, even. At this point, 20 years ago was 1997. The Game Boy Color falls under that. If, you know, Game Boy Colors are extremely hard to find nowadays because those games were built in the 90s, which was like the ultimate age of throwable, like, or disposable, right? We had disposable cameras. We had, you know, things weren't meant to last. Would you agree with that statement, or?
I mean, it really depends on the context. Like the,
for example,
the
handheld systems. Let's go with video games and handheld systems. They knew that technology and hardware was going to be advancing rapidly, so they did not make, you know, it's not like a computer where now you invest in a computer and you see like 7 or 8 years out of it. You know, The original, or the Xbox 360, when it first released, it ran, it was one of the longest running consoles up until the Xbox One released about 4 or 5 years ago. So we'll say it had a good 7-8 year run. In that time, there was no way that they could keep selling the same Xbox 360 arcade version that came out on day one. They had to upgrade it because the technology was moving so fast. So they've intentionally not made these systems very durable. Like the Game Boy Color was not durable. The original Game Boy was not durable because they knew they were going to be replacing it so fast with new hardware. And that's more or less what we saw. The Game Boy Color reigned for about 5 years, and then the Game Boy Advance for 2 years, and then they came up with an upgraded version of the Advance, the Game Boy Advance SP, which stood for Super Portable, fun fact. And it had a backlit screen, which was one of the biggest revelations for Nintendo handheld systems, because up till that point, they hadn't been backlit.
Yeah.
And so now you could play these things at night or in the dark. Whereas for like the Game Boy Advance, the long oblique handheld one, you had to get like a special attachment that plugged into the top and made a little light over your display. Or the Game Boy Color, they had this thing that would go over like a case that had a light on top of it so you could see to play your game at night. So they built that in. Then the DS came out with not one, but two screens, and had featured a touch screen because, you know, the iPhone had come out with touch screen technology on smartphones. Because up to that point, you know, the concept of a touch screen was like, whoa, what's this? And so these hardware implementations of game systems haven't been made to be very durable because they figure within 5 years it'll be obsolete and they'll be coming out with a new one anyways. So why make it durable? Why keep supporting it? And so that's why they older game consoles and game systems are so rare, because they break so easily and there's no parts for them.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't personally experienced that issue, but I don't know.
It's like, you know, a Game Boy Advance SP nowadays will cost you, if you go to eBay, anywhere between $60 and $90. I know that one Game Boy game, you know, Pokemon Emerald, a game that came out in 2005, is still worth $35.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just...
the market has showed a kind of leveling off. Things do fall off, but they also generally retain playability. Games that retain playability retain their value very well.
Mm-hmm. And that's just, you know, with those earlier game consoles, like the original Red versus Blue Pokemon games, they at a certain point became unplayable. You'd have to actually bust open the cartridge. Well, not bust open, you have to take apart the cartridge and pop off the spot, you know, spot welded battery. If you say you didn't play that game for like 4 or 5 years, it had an internal battery that was constantly powering RAM that kept your save data from your video game. So once that battery died, your save data was gone, and it couldn't save any new games. So you basically, every time you shut off the game system, you'd lose all your progress. Unless you open it up and added in a new battery, or a new internal battery, which is just like a CR2025 watch battery. But they're not, you know, those batteries that they were originally made with were rechargeable. They're meant to, you know, keep battery life up. We assume that this game's going to be constantly plugged into the bigger system that has its own batteries, so it'll constantly be getting like a weird trickle charge effect. And then they moved away from that whenever they saw that this kind of effect was happening. So, long story short, Nintendo has done away with their physical retro version of the NES. They still have NES games available via the Virtual Console through the Nintendo Store, and that's available on like the Wii U, the 3DS, and the new Nintendo Switch. So, you know, they're definitely doing more with backwards compatibility and Virtual Consoles than any of the other game systems. The only other thing I can think of that really closely follows that is that I believe that PlayStation is doing a remake of Banjo-Kazooie. I think that's happening.
Okay.
And I think Xbox had made a remake, the Xbox One, with the Master Chief Collection. They more or less remastered Halo 2, which up until that point was only available on the original Xbox, because they for the like 10 year anniversary of Halo, they came out in 2011 with that Halo Combat Evolved Anniversary Edition. So you could play the original Halo video game that sort of was the father of all modern FPSs.
And then they mapped it onto the new engine that they were using that the Halo 3 engine?
They built it on top of? It was the Halo Reach engine. Halo Reach and Combat Evolved were on the same engine.
Yeah.
Because if you did multiplayer on the Combat Evolved thing, it took you more or less to Reach's multiplayer.
Yeah, yeah.
ODST was on the Halo 3 engine.
Okay, yeah.
So,
and then when they updated Halo 2 for the anniversary, they stacked...
They basically did the Master Chief Collection, which was everything except... the Xbox One with the Master Chief Collection. They more or less remastered Halo 2, which up until that point was only available on the original Xbox, because they for the like 10-year anniversary of Halo, they came out in 2011 with that Halo Combat Evolved Anniversary Edition. So you could play the original Halo video game that sort of was the father of all modern FPSs.
And then they mapped it onto the new engine that they were using that the Halo 3 engine?
ODST was on the Halo 3 engine.
Okay, yeah.
So,
and then when they updated Halo 2 for the anniversary, they stacked...
They basically did the Master Chief Collection, which was everything except Halo 3 ODST.
And they packed it on top of the Halo 4 engine, is that right?
Yes.
When they redid 2, they built it on the 4 engine.
Yes. Yeah. So... anyways, backward compatibility with video games is a very serious market. A lot of people like to play these video games that they did when they were kids even just a couple years back. Because, for example, Call of Duty Black Ops was such an amazing game, especially because it featured Black Ops zombies in its best form. You know, Call of Duty has tried to re-emulate the zombies franchise throughout other renditions of it, like Advanced Warfare and things like that. And it's never been quite the same as being able to play in that World War II style-esque zombie mode. So, anywho, it's the top of the hour. It's currently 7:02 in the evening. You're listening to WRFL Lexington. More importantly, this is Tech Talks, and we want to thank you for tuning in and teching out with us. We're going to take a short music break, and then we'll be back with our scary topic of the evening and some other random stuff. So, with that, keep it locked, and we will catch you all in a little bit. Alright, everyone, thank you for tuning in and teching out this wonderful Thursday evening. My goodness, what a beautiful day out it's been. Anywho, so our scary topic for the evening is actually about a black hole, which is what makes it scary. So, Grant, would you happen to have the article anywhere nearby?
Not at the moment, but we can...
Say that again?
Oh, yeah, not at the moment, but we can get there.
Awesome. So, long story short, we have finally been able to take a photograph of a black hole.
Not just any black hole.
The nearest black hole, if I'm not mistaken?
No, it's not the nearest, but it is the most impressive.
And what makes it that impressive?
It's the one that holds our galaxy together.
Oh, so the central black hole.
Yeah.
Really? I didn't realize it was that far away. So, basically, what has happened, the way a black hole works is it is a area of space that has such intense, massive gravity. Typically, it's what's left over. It's more or less the carcass of a dead star is what a black hole typically is. And so, once a star goes supernova, it burns off all of the hydrogen. So going back to why the sun works. The sun is basically a giant fusion reactor. And so it's got all sorts of molten gases at its core. It's not actually solid object. It's just a ball of fire. That the outermost layer is all hydrogen that is constantly igniting. And then part of the chemical reaction makes it cool. And some of the other elements that are in the sun cause more hydrogen to be created. And then it's a constant cycle of it burning. But at some point, so much of it will actually get lost forever, which is why stars die. So when a star dies, it burns off all of its hydrogen. There's no more base chemicals left to cause that reaction that keeps the sun going, and it just sort of explodes.
Well, the hydrogen becomes helium, and the helium can turn to lithium, to beryllium, to boron, all the way down the chain, and...
Until it finally hits an element that it gets transformed into that's not as combustible.
Iron is actually the killer.
Mm-hmm.
So you can do that chain, I think, like 18 times, because you skip some of the elements, and then eventually you get an iron core, and iron doesn't burn.
No.
Especially in the way that a lot of those gases do. Mm-hmm.
And so then what will happen is it will explode. It will go supernova, and the resulting gravity of a sun constantly burning, it's that core that holds everything together. That's why the sun rotates around the Earth. I'm sorry, I said that backwards. It's why the Earth rotates around the sun, and the moon rotates around the Earth. The Earth has that molten core in the middle that's constantly spinning, giving us a magnetic field that caught the moon, which was some asteroid at some point that was moving just slow enough and just the right trajectory that it got caught in our planet, planetary gravity well, and then it started orbiting the Earth as the Earth orbits the sun. And so when it collapses, that gravity is still technically there. That magnetic field is still technically there. So after that massive instant of explosion, all that stuff sort of gets sucked back in towards where that core of the sun used to be. And it gets crushed and compounded so much that it keeps increasing the weight and the gravity of it more or less exponentially. If I'm not mistaken, doesn't the iron itself also become magnetized to create an even stronger magnetic field, thus increasing the gravity?
Yeah, at some level. But the sun itself, with any metal or transitional state, will... have a huge magnetic field around it, no matter what it's made out of.
So even though that it's not like that instant of explosion gets rid of that magnetic field, it's still lingering there, and it still has a pretty strong force, correct?
Yeah.
So it'll suck all the remnants of the star together and compound it, and that's how a black hole is formed. It's basically just a place where the gravity is so strong that once a light wave goes into it, it technically can't get out, because the protons... it's affecting things on a subatomic level, meaning that normally when we deal with gravity, our atoms are still just existing normally. They just happen to exist held in one single place. They can still move, hence why we can, go out into space, for example. The gravity's not strong enough to keep us pulled in, whereas in a black hole, the gravity is so intense and strong that the atoms themselves cannot escape. They are literally stuck in that gravity, attached to whatever mass is at the event horizon.
Yeah. Let me take another swing at this, maybe. So what happens that makes a black hole black is that Einstein proved in the early 1900s that light is impacted by mass and energy the same way that mass is. We have this understanding that if I put two bodies together in space, they will be attracted to each other because of gravity. But the big conclusion, one of the big conclusions of relativity, is that light is affected by the same process. So there is a certain amount of... Let's imagine you're on a really small asteroid, right? You jump. You have enough energy then to escape that asteroid under your own power at a certain speed, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, on Earth, you can't, even on the moon, you can't just jump and escape the moon.
Yeah.
But we have talked about recently the idea that you can be on the moon, and this has happened, playing golf and hit a golf ball hard enough to send it out of orbit. Mm-hmm. You can actually break out of orbit with nothing but a golf club
mm-hmm.
on the moon. So then you get on Earth, and clearly you can't break golf balls out of orbit on Earth. And so the difficulty rises at every level. So if you're standing on the surface of the sun, you're going to need rockets far beyond the capacity of what we have to be able to escape mm-hmm. from the sun. So imagine something that's about 3 times heavier than the sun at a
holding
minimum.
You in.
At a minimum,
yeah,
holding you in.
So out of curiosity, I wonder if for example, the hypothetical faster than light travel concept. If you had an engine that could travel faster than light, could it technically escape from a black hole?
That is a great question that brings to mind some very bizarre math that I'll get into with you later.
That's right.
But the short answer is, I don't know. I haven't tried to do the math.
Well, that and also it probably falls into the realm of theoretical physics because there's no way that we can emulate a black hole. Even to try to simulate a black hole could have catastrophic effects just even in a lab. You know, you would literally a simulated mini black hole would literally pull its case into it and just constantly keep
Well, growing. It is something that we've actually done at CERN. That's what happens sometimes when they do those particle collisions. Mm-hmm. They are able to make temporary, albeit very unstable, very small black holes, spaces where there's so much mass at one point that it collapses in on itself.
Mm-hmm.
And so the reason why black holes look black, going back to that, you and I and everything that exists has something called a Schwarzschild radius.
Mm-hmm.
And so for the Earth, it's about the size of a beach ball, I mm-hmm. believe, which means that if you were to compact the Earth down to the size of a beach ball, then you would have a black hole.
Mm-hmm.
Likewise, for the sun, it's, I don't remember exactly, but it's something on the magnitude of like
our moon,
the size of, it's maybe about the size of the moon. I don't really remember the exact number on that. But the point is, if you were to squish the sun down to be very dense and you fit it inside the size of the moon, voila, you would have a black hole. So eventually something gets massive enough, about 3 or 4 times bigger than the sun, and it will naturally have a tendency to fall in on itself once it runs out of that
fuel
energy that pushes outward. The sun is held outward by the fusion and the energy moving out of the core.
So basically the sun is a giant constant nuclear explosion. Like when you drop a nuclear bomb, that kind of explosion, except it's a continuous loop, if you will.
Try dropping about 1,000 of them and you're on the right factor.
Yeah,
scale.
Yeah, that's what I was talking about. Yeah. To scale it down and dropping a nuke and having it constantly loop on itself to where the force of the nuke exploding causes the other part of the nuke to also explode again, and just this constant non-stop explosion. That's what the sun is. It's literally just thousands of, like, 1,000 nuclear explosions constantly going at once.
Yeah, pretty much.
And eventually it runs out of fuel, mm-hmm. you know, as we've said.
So eventually you get an object dense enough and heavy enough that it falls within its own Schwarzschild radius. And now you have an object whose mass is large enough that should you or I or even light itself fall within...
Light does have a measurable mass. Light is just protons.
Photons.
Photons, that's what I'm sorry.
It doesn't have mass, it has energy.
What? There are photon particles, though. They are in a particulate form.
They can be.
They can be
on
measured.
How you measure
them. They can be measured as particles.
Yes.
So not. That's what I should say whenever I, you know, when I said that they have mass. It means they can be particles. And particles can we understand on a basic level how particles move and interact with each other,
mm-hmm.
in the form of protons, electrons, photons, which are light particles,
yeah.
and things like neutrons, all that stuff. Yeah. And so as you were saying.
The light has a certain amount of energy. Energy interacts with energy. That's the concept of gravity. And so when light gets close enough that it falls within this large space around it, The light has now fallen within the event horizon. No matter what angle that light is moving at relative to that massive sun, it will never be able to be at an angle by which that light can escape. So normally the light will like pass right by the earth. The rest of the light from the sun, it's not like it all gets sucked into the earth. What hits the earth, and the rest of it
curves
a little bit,
space.
But just well, and that's goes
why we
out.
Can. That's why we can see stars.
Yeah.
Every time you see a star, that is an actual direct. If you draw a straight line from your eyes to the actual star itself, that is what that is.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why you know it'd be like holding a flashlight out. If you're at a certain angle, you can't see it. But if you're looking at it dead on, no matter how far away it is, you're still going to probably be able to see a speck of light.
Yeah. Yeah. So you have this star, right? And even if it is producing light, if it's still undergoing that reaction, it's all packed into a space close enough that when the light leaves,
it
immediately
again.
Gets sucked back in by gravity.
Mm-hmm.
And so
it's interesting because black holes are actually spherical in shape.
Yeah, yeah.
But every time you view a black hole, it looks like a flat surface, sort of like a portal or a window, if you will.
Yeah.
And no matter what angle you look at it from, it will always show that flat surface because the only reason that we can understand the form of curvature is light. The refraction of light gives us depth perception. So in a black hole, there's not light, so we have no sense of depth perception. It's, you know, it's like that one material that they've been showing on Facebook that's the blackest material
that
on Earth.
That ultra-black paint.
Yes, yeah. And that it absorbs 97% of the light that hits it. It's basically that multiplied by a million is what a black hole is. So much so that, you know, light itself can't pass through it.
Yeah, yeah. So this is a great example. If you want to see the kind of effect that a black hole has, look it up. I just did myself. I typed in ultra black paint, and it'll pull up examples, videos that you can watch where they show this paint that doesn't really react like you expect. They shine a flashlight on it and it doesn't change color. Same thing happens with a black hole. It has no interaction with a light. It gives us no feedback whatsoever. Mm-hmm. Other than its gravity, because the light itself
can't escape. Whereas
can't escape.
This material just is made up of such chemicals that it doesn't refract light.
Yes, yes.
And that's, again, you know, something we've explained constantly. Light there's nothing is actually a color. So when you look around, this is what colorblind people can still see, even if they're colorblind. What it is that our eyes are set up to detect the certain light refractions. So when you shine a light at an object, that object's technically gray. It technically has no color. But what it does is as that light hits it, that material, whatever it's made out of, for example, plants will absorb almost every color on the spectrum, the you know, ultraviolet spectrum, visible spectrum.
The visible.
Yeah, which are those, what, primary and secondary colors? Blue, green, yellow, orange.
Everything that falls in the color spectrum.
Yeah, I guess I'm just saying as far as what they're generally shown as. So, for example, the Pink Floyd T-shirt, if you will, is a logo representing a famous experiment where you take a multifaceted crystal, if you will, that has different angles. You shine a light into it in one end, and it splits out into the different colors on the other end.
Mm-hmm.
And that's basically what an object does. Like, if you shine a light at a leaf, what it's doing is it's absorbing every other color other than green. And then that green is getting bounced more or less back at your eyes. And then your eyes are able to detect that is a green. That color of light hasn't been absorbed by that object. And that's why you can still see, even if someone is colorblind, they can see shades sometimes. For example, yellow. Yellow is a very hard to absorb color, whereas things like greens and blues can be absorbed and look very similar to someone whose eyes technically can't filter out or filter the incoming refracted light. And so that's why we see colors, is that it's all technically a light refraction. So whenever you shine a light into, say, a glass of water and you see the sort of rainbow effect that happens, that's light refraction, you know?
Yeah. I mean, That's what that is. Yeah. And
how'd we get on this topic again?
Because we were talking about light. Because we were talking about the paint as an example. Right. Black holes. Yeah, yeah. Because we were talking about the photo of a black hole.
Yeah. And so that this thing, you know, this material doesn't refract light like almost at all. It only about 3% of the light that you shine at it will be refracted to where you know. And at that point, we can't see enough of that refracted light because it's more or less getting surrounded from our view. You know, if you're looking straight ahead and you have a bunch of lights shining around you, it makes it harder to see whatever you're focused on because there's so much peripheral light. It's sort of the exact opposite, where it's hard to see something coming at you because there's so much peripheral darkness. So it's an interesting effect, black holes and this black, ultra black material. It's also funny because those two things, they have the same effect, but they work in complete opposites. One is powered by gravity, the other one is powered by light refraction, if you will. So, with that, that's been our scary topic for the evening. We'll probably be back around 7:45 for one more short topic. In the meantime, thank you for tuning in and teching out with us here on Tech Talks. We will be back in a few minutes. Right, everyone, thank you for tuning in and teching out with us. It is now 7:50 in the evening, which means we are on our way out. We have one final technological travesty for you today. It might not be a travesty, but it will be technological.
Last thing that we got coming up, it's a two-parter, so we're going to do this real quick. We're going to take a survey of the state of autonomous cars. First thing up, remember a couple weeks ago, we talked about the fact that Google has sued Otto, a company owned by Uber, whose CEO was a former Google employee who had worked on the Google self-driving car. They accused him of leaving Google with sensitive data, and in turn, Otto and Uber have responded in the past day or so, saying that that he did in fact have data, but that Uber never used it to their advantage, basically is the gist of what I understood their arbitration to have said today. So that their goal is to just kind of throw Lewandowski under the bus. Self-driving bus. Huh. Let him just...
That's pretty funny, actually.
Kind of make his own bed and lie in it. But...
You stole from Google, you get the clamp, see?
Yeah. So, Uber is kind of trying to weasel their way out under this one by putting up a fall, man.
All right, you stand here and face this way. If you hear people behind you that sound like a firing squad, don't turn around. It's just the janitor. It's fine. You're not going to get, backstabbed by any bullets or anything like that. It'll be fine. Just trust us. We got your back, Lewandowski. All right, quick, run. Get out of here, quick. And then Google moves in as the assault team.
Otto also claims that Google claims that it was some of their radar technology that got stolen in this trade theft, right? But Otto and Uber are claiming that can't be valid and true because
they
Otto
use
uses off-the-shelf parts in their radar. They're not using a custom radar.
Like Google is.
Which is also kind of an admission of, like, we can't be using your tech because your tech is cooler. Yeah. Is kind of what Otto said today.
Which is fair. That's
which
very
is fair,
fair.
Which is fair. Which is fair. Yeah. But it's just, it's interesting the chain of events that falls out of this. So now that we've covered that, let's get to the other end of this.
All right. I'm ready. Let's do it.
Enter Musk.
Ooh.
Tesla. Semi-truck. September.
Really?
September.
Hmm. Neat.
They're going to be breaking in to the autonomous big rig world by the end of the year. Huh. That's their goal.
We gonna make your trucks deliver themselves, everybody.
So that they're setting to unveil it in September. So this is building a lot of buzz, especially since they're so close to the Model 3 launch for that sedan. And now they've already got the next project in their sights. And let me tell you what, their PR team has done a spectacular job of the past couple of years of never letting the buzz die.
Oh, yeah.
As soon as they're about to get one product, the next one's announced. There's never downtime. There's always something to discuss. And that's why he's done such a good job of staying on our radar for 3 years now.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Gosh, we've been doing this show for almost three years,
yeah.
Well, a little over two. We're only like 4 months over two. We can't claim almost three.
But the point is, he's
up there. He's always in the news. Game. Yeah, he knows. He knows what's up. That's his plan to rule the world, dude. I'm telling you, he's got it right. That man. Let's make him the second businessman to ever be elected president without a day of political office experience in his life. Let's do it.
He also tweeted in the same window that he was interested in unveiling a pickup truck in about 18 months.
I'm interested in it. It might happen, but I'm interested in doing it.
Yeah. So, well, awesome. Here's the thing, though. He sets a goal, and then he goes and does it. So I have no reason to believe that 20 months from now, we won't be looking at the next. When does this turn into, like, a convention, like the Worldwide Developers Conference, you know, like when does it become that kind of thing?
The Tesla, because or the Elon Musk convention,
I feel like it becomes that way more and more every year, that the unveil gets bigger and flashier and cooler and there's more stuff
Apple-esque.
Going on. Yeah, they're taking on this kind of Apple behavior.
Nice.
With this.
Well, with that, that's all our time for this evening. We want to thank you for tuning in and teching out with us. And with that, we're going to go out to some music, everybody. Up next, we have The Matinee with the song Dancing on Your Grave from that album that has the same title, Dancing on Your Grave. So keep it locked here at your only alternative left. Up next, Field Sounds.
Hey there. If you're enjoying this podcast from WRFL Lexington, you may enjoy our live radio stream at WRFL.fm and, of course, via radio at 88.1 FM in the Central Kentucky area. We have a wide variety of programs you're sure to enjoy. Just go to WRFL.fm/schedule and see what programs appeal most to you. Thanks again for listening to this podcast from WRFL Lexington.